I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Gut Glow podcast. Over the last year, through my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. Over the next few weeks, I'll be talking to people who inspire me and people who I believe you, the listener, will benefit greatly by listening to. But today, I am by myself on the Gut Glow podcast. It's the last episode of season two, and I decided that I would come on and talk to you myself, just a little bit more about my life, so you can get to know a little bit about where I'm at on my journey, how I'm feeling these days. And so many people have asked me questions about my diet and skincare, so I decided that this would be the perfect opportunity to share my story with you a little more. When I worked in Spin, I covered a show called Plan B while my friend Serena was on maternity leave. So I'm used to talking on the radio by myself, but this is weird to be on my podcast by myself, because normally, as you know, I don't talk too much on my podcast. I leave that up to my guests. So I suppose I'm in the hot seat today. So first of all, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for the support of my podcast. I have been blown away by it. It's opened up a whole new world to me. I've learned so much from my guests, and I hope that I've kept you company over the last couple of months. And thank you so much for the continued support and all of the love. It is so appreciated. I was actually watching that Netflix show yesterday called Heal, and in it they speak about how human connection and support and encouragement can get you through illness and help you heal faster, and that is definitely the case for me, so thank you. Last week, I asked you guys on Instagram if you had any questions for me for this episode, because I decided to do a Q&A, and I got pages and pages and pages of questions. So I've written them down. I've tried to put them in some sort of order. And I hope I answered your questions. A lot of the same ones came in. And I'm going to start with the most popular question, which was, how do you stay positive? Well, the answer to that is I am not positive all the time. I have some really bad days. They are less often now, but I still have them. And in fact, I have bad weeks. I'm still making sense of everything that's happened over the last 18 months. I'm trying to put my best foot forward, but of course, I have bad days too. I suppose my positivity first kicked in with this whole cancer journey when I realized that I couldn't change it. I was in that room with my doctor. I was told I had cancer, and I left and I went home. There was nothing I could do to change what had happened. I tried to wake myself up when I was in that room with that doctor, but I couldn't. It wasn't a dream. It was my real life. And I was definitely in a lot of shock. I was very angry. What I felt kind of weird was I didn't get to say goodbye to my old life. I didn't even get 5 more minutes with myself as a normal person. Like, 1 minute I was sitting on my bed looking into Pia's crib. The next minute I found a lump and I knew it was cancer. I knew deep down that it was cancer. So in many ways I felt really sad that I didn't get one last night out with that feeling of being like invincible and free spirited, and I didn't get one more walk with my baby of just thinking about normal things. I didn't get to just lie on the couch for one more night and not have to worry about dying. Like, this was my reality. And my life changed in that second. And I'd heard of people talking about how their life changed in a second before, and I never really got it. Everything changed that night. And I had no option but to keep going and to get up every morning and just keep putting one foot in front of the other. Of course, I had the support of my family, which really got me through it. Jamie was amazing. His life stopped too. His life has changed forever. And my mum was just heartbroken. My stepdad was devastated as well. All the Crawfords and my brothers and my sisters-in-law, it was just the worst time, and everyone was really scared, I think. And I think Jamie was really scared too, but people, you know, stayed strong for me. I decided that I had to accept the cancer in order to move on, and I worked on that for a very long time with my brother Michael. He's really good at that sort of stuff, so he was up with me a lot and chatting to me. I'd go out for walks with my mum every day. Jamie was just so hands-on with Pia, so it really was a time of, I suppose, everyone's life stopped and we all just pulled together. And I think I came to a place where I could say, this isn't the worst thing that could happen. And like, it's so weird. I just don't know if I'd change it, if I could go back, because I live my life so differently now. It sounds like such a weird thing to say, and I'm sure people don't really understand it. But I have such an appreciation for life, and I love how well I feel on the inside through eating fruit and veg and drinking loads of water, that, like, it's the toughest lesson I ever learned, and there is so much sadness around my cancer, but I've tried my best to turn it into a positive. Counselling definitely helped, because I felt like I was getting a little bit angry when I went back to work, and I was getting stressed again, and I was taking things out on Jamie, to be honest. And he said, Georgie, it's time. You need to go and just check that you're okay and don't hang on to these things. And so I decided to go and see a counsellor, and it was really the best thing I ever did. Did you find after treatment harder mentally than when you were going through it? The biggest shock for me during my cancer treatment was that when it was over, I didn't feel a massive relief. So I suppose for so long I'd been saying, just get to June when the chemo is over, or just get to September when the radiotherapy is over. And then you get to that day, but cancer is still your reality. It's not like when you finish your exams in school and you can forget about it and move on. I still felt the same as I did on my last day of treatment as I did the week after, if that makes sense. And I suppose people want you to go back to normal and people want you to feel happy again. But this still happened to you. This is still happening to you. So that was definitely tough. And I did find after treatment, I definitely hit that low that everyone talks about, that I was hoping that wouldn't happen to me. I felt very prepared for the end of it. But there is this kind of disappointment at the end that you can't leave it behind. Are you ever overwhelmed by everything that's happened to you? Yes, I miss my innocence. I miss going out and having the absolute crack. I miss that feeling of being invincible. Like, I always thought, I was always quite independent, and I was always like, I'll be fine, I'm grand. But, you know, I had to find out the hard way that I wasn't. So yeah, that's hard, and I do find it sad some days that this happened to our family. And I look at Pia and, you know, someday I'm going to have to tell her that this happened to me. So that is tough. What helps me on my difficult days? Well, I suppose human connection, which Alison Canavan spoke about in our podcast together. Jamie just reassuring me that everything's going to be okay, or chatting to my mum and my stepdad, my brothers, like my amazing sisters-in-law, and the Crawfords are all amazing. So they've definitely helped me get through it. Getting out for walks really helps. There is nothing like going out and getting fresh air. I'll never forget one day walking with my mum in Marley Park, and I was going through chemo, and we were talking about the Instagram thing, and I was like, this is so weird, like all these people that I don't know are following me and connecting with me and sending me amazing messages. And I turned around to my mum and I said, all of a sudden I have something in common with everyone, which is cancer. Because everyone gets it. Everyone knows someone who's been through it. So that support really got me through. Those walks with my mum every morning got me through it. Pia, the light of my life, waking up every morning to her smiling face. And I always said, it must be harder for people whose kids are maybe a bit older and don't need that constant care. Because all I wanted to do was go to bed and watch Netflix, but I wanted to get up and face the day for her. So I never lay in bed through treatment. I went to bed very early, and Jamie got up with Pia most mornings, but I got up and I faced the day, and that transformed the journey for me. How did Jamie react to the cancer? I think Jamie would have preferred if it was him. I think he was absolutely gutted. We lost Jamie's dad to cancer the year before, and we were still grieving for him, and it was so sudden that we lost John, and he was such an amazing person. And Jamie, like, we all took it really badly. So I think when I got sick then, he was just like, oh my God, like, how is this happening to us? So, but he was really strong, and a great tip from Jamie, and I might get him on this podcast one day, but a great tip from Jamie is he used to read all of these medical journals so that when I freaked out on the couch at night, saying, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, he would be able to give me the facts. And that really helped. Like, he's so level-headed, and he's educated himself in order to help me. And that was so appreciated. And I did used to read his text messages. Sorry, Jamie, if you're listening, but I used to read his messages to kind of find out how he was really feeling, because I was afraid that he was putting on a brave face for me and not telling me the truth. But I think he copped on that I was reading his messages. So we never wrote anything like that in it. So I don't really know exactly how he felt. I don't think I want to know. I don't think I want to know how scared he really was, because that will freak me out. And Jamie, when Jamie gets scared of something, it's really contagious, and like I get really scared then. So I need him to be the strong person and to fully believe that I will be well. That's what I need him to do for me. Plans for a family. Never in a million years did I think that Pia would be two and we'd be still a few years off from having a second child. I always wanted six kids, and then I had one, and then I was like, yeah, I really don't think I could do the six. So it's shocking. It's shocking that I think the cancer got real for me when I went in to see my oncologist for the first time. And he said to me, there's an 80% chance your fertility will return. I think before I'd been like, oh, I'll just get chemo and I'll be fine, and I'll just go back to my normal life and I'll go back to work in the new year. And when those words came out of his mouth, I was like, this is so serious. This is the real deal. This is really happening to me, and this is a proper cancer diagnosis. So we rushed into IVF like the following week, and I was so up to 90 with all the cancer stuff that I couldn't deal with the IVF. So I said to Jamie, just tell me what I need to do. I don't want to read into this. I don't want to know what these injections are. You just line them up, because I can't take it in. I can't take on anything else. And I'm, you know, usually a very informed person and like to know everything that's going on. But for this, I couldn't cope. And maybe it's because it was to do with my fertility. I think I have to wait for another year and a half before we can start trying, because I'm on a drug called tamoxifen. So we'll see how we go. It's weird. It's like I'm so happy just the three of us at the moment. I think because Pia like fills my life with so much love and joy that she is everything I need right now. And if I only had her, I'd still be the happiest person on the planet. I suppose with my cancer journey, I put so much into just believing that it was going to be okay, that I have to just believe this is going to be okay too. Has my personality changed? I'm definitely not as mad as I used to be. In terms of before I got sick, I had a lot of frantic energy. I was always rushing, always really unprepared. Now in work, I was very organized. I'm talking about in my private life. And when I got sick, everything just slowed right down. What is my ideal day? At the moment, it's my Saturdays. Like every Saturday, I have an ideal day. So I get up on a Saturday morning with Pia. She sleeps until about 8. And during the week, I get up at around 4:45. So by the time she wakes up at 8 on a Saturday, I've had like a 3-hour lie-in. So that's enough for me. We get up. We usually then by 9:30 are in Cabinteely Park for the park run. We do the park run together and then we go for brunch, just the three of us. And it's like my favourite thing to do. Like before the park run came into our lives, we used to just get up and kind of lounge around and I'd just clean the house or whatever. Now it's amazing to get up, leave the house as a family, and then have a date afterwards, just the three of us. I absolutely love it. Then we come home, Pia has a nap. I love then going out, getting the dinner. Jamie cooks steaks on a Saturday night, bottle of wine, and yeah, just watching something on Netflix. Like that's my ideal day, is just normality. Just doing normal things that I just get so much joy from now. So many questions about my diet and food. So first of all, I'm going to say that my oncologist told me there is no diet for my particular cancer. That all I should do is have a balanced diet and eat my fruit and veg. So when she said that to me, I decided to not look up any diets. I didn't want to know. I didn't want to read anything online about cancer diets. I took on the challenge of eating 5 to 7 portions of fruit and vegetable a day, because to be honest, that was a huge change for me. And that was an undertaking in itself. Before I got sick, I probably would have eaten 3 to 4 portions of vegetables, fruit and veg a day. No, maybe 2 to 3, I think would be accurate. So now what I do is I like my routine when it comes to food. So I get up, as I said, really early in the morning. I'm sitting at my desk by 5:30, 6:00. At this point, I'm drinking water until about a quarter past six when I drink a coffee, and I'm not ashamed to say that. So I have my coffee at a quarter past six, and then either at 7 or 8, I'll have porridge. I can't function without porridge. And I was a little bit like that before I got sick, but I ate a lot of granolas and things like that before. Now it's porridge. So I have my porridge. I finish work at 1 o'clock. So at around 10 o'clock, I'll eat again because it's a really busy shift. Most of us who work on Breakfast News have two breakfasts. So then at around 10 o'clock, I will eat two portions of fruit and I might have some toast. I allow myself to eat toast as well because I literally am starving all the time. So what I do is I try to pack in two portions of fruit within my work day. So I'm leaving with two in the bag. I come home and usually for lunch, I will have spinach, tomato, avocado, carrots, stuff like that. And sometimes I might have them in a wrap, or sometimes I might have carrots and hummus and then a little salad on the side. But I make sure to have a big lunch. Then myself and Pia will probably head out for the afternoon, go to the park or library or something like that. I'll come home and then I'll try to eat 3 to 4 portions of fruit and veg again. So for my dinner, I usually have something like on a bed of sweet potatoes. So if I have a chickpea curry with peppers and onions and chickpeas and tomatoes on a bed of sweet potato, or I'll have a big stir fry on some whole grain rice. Sometimes I have pasta with veg in it if I'm training or I'm going off to dancing or something like that. I try to eat my dinner before 7 just because I go to bed so early that I can't wait until Pia goes to sleep, because otherwise I'm literally going to bed 10 minutes after my dinner finishes. Before I got sick, I would always eat biscuits or some sort of chocolate on the couch at night time. I rarely do that now. I might have a bit of dark chocolate, but usually my dinner is the last thing I eat. That is the biggest thing that I've changed in my life, I suppose, since getting sick, is that reliance on that nighttime treat. And the main reason that I don't do that anymore is because I just don't want to eat sugar right before I go to bed. It just freaks me out. I don't know why. So I might have a sleepy tea or some water, but usually my dinners are so big that I'm completely full until I go to sleep. Sometimes I'll just roast a huge tray of cauliflower, peppers, courgette, and stick them in the fridge. I like to batch cook for myself because it stops me, I suppose, sticking on a bowl of pasta just for the ease of it. I suppose you really have to plan when it comes to healthy eating. And so what I try to do is on a Monday, I try to make a huge chickpea curry. I chop up a load of sweet potatoes. I cook them on the Monday. So when it's hectic and Pia's running around and Jamie's coming home looking for his dinner, I know my stuff is there. I don't have to worry about eating any kind of bad food. I think for so long, I went along with the chicken thing, even though I didn't want to eat chicken, because Jamie eats chicken. And I was just always like, Jamie, I hate chicken. But I suppose what I did was I just went along with it just to like make life easier for everyone else and on myself to only make one dinner. But now I feel like I've almost stood up for myself and admitted that I don't want to eat that. So I don't eat it anymore. So Monday to Thursday, I'll only eat vegetarian dinners, and not for any particular reason other than I don't like the taste of chicken and I don't want to eat too much red meat. So usually then we'll have fish on a Friday, always have a steak on a Saturday. And then on a Sunday, we're usually down in Jamie's mum's or my mum's for dinner, and I'll just eat whatever they have. So I'm really strict on myself Monday to Thursday, packing in the fruit and veg as much as I can. And then, yeah, the weekends, like, I definitely wouldn't be hitting 7 portions of vegetables a day. No way. But I just try to do it as best I can. I also try to drink 2 litres of water in that time. And I feel like if you can drink a pint of water, you know, before 9 a.m, you're kind of, you've started the day off well. If it gets to 1 o'clock and you haven't drank any water, you're unlikely to catch up. So I just try to pack in the water as early in the day as I can. My skincare routine, somebody asked me about. I suppose my skincare routine really stepped up a notch when I got sick, because I always say when you've got no hair, you have a serious amount of time on your hands. So my skin became my number one priority. Before, it was always my hair, I was always curling it. But then I suppose when you don't have it anymore, and I couldn't hide behind it anymore, and all you could see was my face, it became my number one priority. During chemotherapy, I used pestle and mortar. You can get it in Arnott's. I got sent it as a gift from one of my friends. And it was right at the start of chemo, and this huge box came in the post. And I was like, oh my God, what is this? And it was pestle and mortar, and I'd never heard of it, never even tried it before. And it was so gentle. And I just used to, when Pia would go to sleep, I'd sit down and spend ages doing my face because, listen, I was so bored. So, yeah, I loved it. And I must go back to it, actually, because when I finished treatment, then I went on to the Environ, and I use that on my skin now. I also put, I follow this girl called Caroline Hirons, who is a big advocate of face cloths and a double cleanse. And I've watched so many of her YouTube videos, and then I went out and I bought 20 or 30 face cloths, and they are like my number one, I suppose, tool for good skin. And so I double cleanse using face cloths, and you throw them out, not throw them out, but you throw them into the wash when you're done. Don't keep it for too long without washing them, because obviously bacteria will build. So I cleanse, tone, moisturize every second night. Then I use Liquid Gold Alpha H, I think it's called. But yeah, Liquid Gold. I'll post a picture to my Instagram stories. It's like this, oh my God, I'm so bad at this sort of stuff, but it's like an acid. It's an exfoliator. And instead of scrubbing yourself with a scrub, you put this on and it's like literally like you've had a facial. So that's a really good tip. And it's good for like smoothing out your skin as well. And then I've also started using this Sarah Chapman skincare, and I use her night cream, which is so fab. How did I get into meditation? That's such a good question. I found it so hard to meditate at the start. I still kind of find it hard. I downloaded the Calm app, and I find that really good. When I go to bed, that's sometimes when the cancer kind of fears kick in. And before, I just like watch TV or scroll through my phone till I fell asleep, or read a book. And that would kind of keep me distracted right up until I went to sleep, so I didn't have to think of the cancer. But now, a couple of times a week, I use the Calm app to go asleep. So funny, I went in to see my counsellor a couple of weeks ago, and she was like, whoa, you look amazing. I was like, really? And she was like, yeah, you just look really chilled and relaxed. And I was like, that's so weird, because I've been meditating to sleep. Now, I don't know if that was just the alpha liquid gold stuff kicking in, or now I don't know if that was a coincidence or not, but she said it to me the week that I started, which I thought was quite weird. So yeah, I do that, and I do find it hard, but I also try to talk to people about meditation, and you know, watch TV programs about it, and see the benefits that other people have felt, and that kind of helps me believe in it more. So yeah, it's definitely a work in progress. It's not something I'm really good at, but it's definitely something that I'm trying to do. What is the biggest misconception about self-care? I think I would say the biggest misconception about self-care is that it's a fad or it doesn't work. It's transformed my life. I live my life so differently now than I did before, and I really feel well, and that is because I prioritize myself more than I ever did before. So I'm really enjoying self-care. I'm really enjoying asking people for help. I'm really enjoying putting myself higher on my own to-do list, taking a moment for myself. It's little tiny things like that that help me get through the day. My dream podcast guest. I feel like every single person that I've interviewed on my podcast has been my dream guest. Like, each one of them brings me this feeling of like joy. I love when I've recorded. I can't wait to put them out. I can't wait to get people's feedback. I love that different people love different episodes. It's amazing. On my wish list, I suppose Samantha Barry is up there. There's so many people. Amy Huberman. There's loads of people on my wish list. Suzanne Jackson. So we'll see how we get on. And yeah, I'm so excited, you know, to bring season 3. Desert Island Discs. Desert Island Discs. What are they? So I think that means what are my favorite songs. So the song that's... there's a song by Kings of Leon called Tallahena Sky. And that's myself and Jamie's song, really. We love that song. And that Elbow song is coming to me now. You know, the one with the orchestra? I was driving home a couple of months ago and that song came on the radio. And it's something I never really spoke about, but when I got sick, I couldn't listen to music because it used to freak me out too much. Number one, it would remind me of my old life, my carefree life. It might bring me back to a time when I wasn't sick, or the lyrics would make me scared for the future. So I didn't listen to music for at least a year. Anytime we get into the car, I turn off Jamie's radio or we listen to talk radio. And in my own car, going to chemo or anything like that, the radio was off. And I was driving home one night a couple of months ago, listening to 98FM where I work. And Dara Quilty played that Elbow song. And I was like, oh my God, this song is like could freak me out if I continue to listen to it. But I was like, no, just listen to it. So I was driving, P was in the back playing with a toy or something. So she was quiet. It was kind of dark. And I listened to it and I didn't feel scared. I didn't feel sad either. Like I enjoyed the moment. And that's when I knew I was kind of getting a bit better. And, you know, maybe I will find pure happiness again. And maybe I will laugh the way I used to again. And maybe my life isn't over and things like that. So that was a standout moment for me in my recovery, was when I could listen to music again. And I wonder if any other cancer patients are the same. Or people who've had an illness, or even just people who feel sad in general, if music kind of triggers them. But I'm so delighted I can listen to the radio again. And do I ever feel like closing the cancer chapter of my life? No, because it is a part of my life and there is nothing that I can do about it but embrace it, try to learn from it and try to take all the positives out of it. I love my family. I love my baby and my husband. All I can do is put one foot in front of the other. And with the support and help, like I said, human connection, please God, I can continue to be well. And I can continue to live my life with hope in my heart that everything is going to be okay. And this is a hard thing for me to say, but I'd rather this have happened to me with everything that I can now teach Pia than it not to have happened at all, to be living this frantic life and for her to think that's normal. So if I've 5 years left, if I've 10 years left, if I've 2 years left, I hope what I have done in the last year will set her upright for life and will make her love and respect herself and value her life. That's all that I've ever wanted. And if she can get that out of this cancer journey for me, well, then I feel so lucky. I hope that we can continue to grow as a family and that she will only know the best version of me. And I hope that she will be proud of me. That's all I want. So that's it from me. Thank you so much for listening to this season of The Good Glow. I have had thousands of messages from all around the world. Irish girls walking on the beach in Sydney, on their way to work in Dubai, Canada, America, you name it. There are people all over the world getting in touch with messages that literally blow me away. People saying that they feel like they're at home because they're just listening to two Irish girls have a conversation. I appreciate that so much. I hope I've kept you company wherever you listen to me. I hope that I have helped open your mind to the benefits of self-care. I hope that I've made you maybe think about things and put yourself higher on your own to-do list. And if you are going through a tough time, remember that you are most definitely not alone. Thank you again for the love and support and for supporting this podcast. It really has been a dream come true. And this is the light at the end of the tunnel for me. So thank you so much. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast. Please subscribe so you can be the first to hear about new episodes. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review. You can check out thegoodglow.ie for more on my story and follow me on Instagram at Georgie J. Crawford.